soon Bournemouth's troubles increased when Tom Heffernan found himself sent off for that tackle. He'd been booked earlier in the match, and now, despite Barnes trying to dissuade the Yorkshire referee, the fullback was off. It hadn't looked a bad enough tackle, though, for a second booking, perhaps.
Hello and welcome to the latest in the lockdown interviews, and we can't wait for this one. Like we can't wait for the start of the Premier League season in terms of AC Bournemouth. I mean, it got off to a damp squib last night with a 0-0 between Villa and Sheffield United, and what on earth was that? I can't believe we're moaning about technology already, but the goal decision system absolutely having a mare. Apparently they call it occlusion. That's where people get in the way and the seven cameras cannot track where the ball is. And I don't know, like even a 20 quid Tommy baby monitor can tell you when there's a lost signal. So surely to God, it was a case of VAR checking GDS. Technology having to check technology. It's bizarre. Bring back old school football, like the 1980s. One of the heroes in the AFC Bournemouth squad, twice on two occasions in fact, was Tommy Heffernan. A marauding fullback with a licence to score. A man whose tackles made the whole crowd wince and a gentleman who's in the supporters club after every game, getting a round in for fans. There are some forthright and strongly worded views here, and if you're not all great with swearing, maybe give this episode a miss. And we start with Neil Dawson, but first, it's Jeff Hayward.
So, we are delighted to have with us Tommy Heffernan. Tommy, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Nice to be on the show.
And you're joining from Ireland, I believe. Is that right?
Dublin, yeah. Back in Dublin now, 20 odd years.
Very good. Very good. We've also got a fan who's about as old as I am to remember some of these games. Neil, how are you doing?
I'm younger than you, Jeff, and I'm doing fine. But I do have many happy childhood memories of watching Tommy Heffernan marauding up and down the wing.
Thank you.
Don't we both? So we're going to kick off, Tommy, by asking us to asking if you can cast your mind back to your childhood. Who did you support and how did you first start playing football?
I supported Man U, but I played an Irish game called hurling first. I wasn't into football. And just by chance, one Sunday, the football team was short and asked me to play. And it just spiraled from there. I played, I was playing for Dublin hurling side, played in Croke Park a few times, and that was my first sport, hurling. So it was just by accident I played football, really.
That was the same with Paul McGrath, was the same, wasn't he? He was a Gaelic footballer, wasn't he? He didn't play football until he was about 14, which was incredible when you think about it.
And more than all, Man United played the Ga as well. They played the Gaelic, I played the hurling.
So how old were you when you first kicked a ball properly?
Probably 17, 18. I was only playing with Dunleary Celtic 2 years when I went to Spurs.
Blimey.
I wasn't playing. I never played, as I say, from school. I was in the Christian Brothers, and their sport was hurling. So you weren't really allowed to play soccer. You couldn't play soccer on a Saturday and hurling on a Sunday. It was one, you were punished if you did, you know, the old days. Not a slap of the letter. wasn't really interested in football.
Did you not used to watch it on the telly?
Did you have telly in your day? There was 10 of us. I had to ask my father, where did the telly go? No, we didn't watch telly. We were out in the street, like playing rounders or curling down the field or soccer just along the street. Till 10 o'clock, you got called in. If you went in at 9:30, you got a spot in bed because there was 9 of us.
And were you just supporting Manchester United because everyone in Ireland supported Man U?
Yeah, you were either Man U or Chelsea back in them days, funny enough. And I used to go over for the Leeds match every year. We'd go to Old Trafford and then down to Elland Road. home and away. That's when I was working in Lourdes Hospital and I could afford to go.
So you must have had a right good crack at football early on then to get noticed by Spurs. So you said you played for Dunleary Celtic, so that must have been, you must have had two great seasons to be picked up by a side as big as Spurs.
We won two FAI Junior Cups, which is probably the same as the amateur FA Cup in England. There's 600-700 teams in it. We won it twice, and next thing I know, I worked in the hospital's only up the road, and I loved the job. And the manager came to me and says, Spurs want you to go over on trial. And I said, well, I want to see if I can get the weekend off. I said, because I'm not just going, leaving my job. And I went and asked the head nurse, and she said, yeah, I could have the weekend off. And I travelled forward and back for 8 weeks. They'd fly me over every weekend, play in the reserves, and then fly back, go back to work, fly back over the next weekend. And after 8 weeks, I said, I'm not coming anymore. I said, I've had enough. So they said, no, we want to sign you. And I said, well, I'm given 2 weeks notice of work. And I did my 2 weeks notice and went back to them.
And that Spurs side at the time, that must have been what, Steve Perryman was the player of that era, wasn't it? Who else was in that team?
They signed Abdelaziz and Velia.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, 81, of course.
Yeah, I wish I could send. I'd send you a picture. I have a great picture of that team.
Yeah, send that over. That'd be great to see that. Yeah,
I'd send it. You're on WhatsApp, aren't you?
Yeah. Send it over. So when you were training with Ardiles and Villa.
Oh God, yeah. Everybody huddled. Neil McNabb was my roommate in Diggs.
Yep.
John Gorman, Steve Perryman. Most of the teams, there was a great side then. Some great players. Our deal is fabulous player.
Were you nervous, Gary? I mean, just coming from...
Yeah.
It must have been a massive thing because you'll have seen, you'll have known that they played in the World Cup and everything. Was it quite overawing coming over from Ireland as a young lad playing with them?
It was because, and no matter what they say, you do get homesick. There's no two ways about it. You miss home. But I had lovely digs and they were nice people. So, and then Neil McNabb moved in and sort of that eased it because you weren't your own. You had another mad lad that was able to go out with you. But it was a good 2 years. It was a learning curve for me. I actually think I fucked up, really, because I was homesick and I never really drank when I was here. And then I went out for a few beers and I sort of lost a bit of, I don't know, as if it wasn't for me, but that I wanted to come home. And Keith Buckinshaw pulled me in. I was going to make my debut against Millwall because Spurs got relegated that year.
Mm-hmm.
They were relegated. And he said, you're going to make your debut at Millwall. So I texted, I rang the family and my father was coming over, my eldest brother. And then I got injured in training. We were going to play them on the bank holiday Monday at Stevens' Day. Is it Stevens' Day? And I got injured and they sent me home. For a week to recover. And I sort of lost interest in it then. I just wanted to be back at home. And that was my plan. And Keith said he was going to let me go at the end of the year. And I said, that's grand. I'll just come back home. And Home Firm, which was a League of Ireland club, wanted to sign me before I came to Spurs. And I said, well, I'll just go back and play League of Ireland or I'll play with Dunleary Celtic. And Phil Holder was at the being, he was at Spurs and he'd left. And I played against him when he was at Palace in the reserves under George Graham. And me and George Graham had a bit of a to-do. I sort of put him in the stand. And then Phil had a go at me and I put him in the stand. And then Alex Dock rang me and said, Phil Holder said that he'd signed for Bournemouth. And Alex was looking for players and Phil recommended me to go there.
Yeah.
So it It was mad. And I just said, will I or won't I? And I got talking to Alex Stock, and he persuaded me to sign for Bournemouth.
Fantastic. And then,
and that brought you down.
I would have never left and went to Sheffield United. But the circumstances of, and I should get this across, because Harry was the coach and didn't want me to go. But, I mean, I'd had, I was like second joint leading scorer from right back, two seasons running. And it was, they offered me a 3-year contract. And I had a look at it. In them days, you just, they give you the contract and they say, take a home, read it out. You didn't have an agent and all this type of shite. And I read it, and they offered me £9 a week rise. And I went, no, give me a signing on fee. Give me something like, what's it going to cost to replace me? I said, like, joint second leading scorer from right back, two seasons. Played 100, I think, consecutive games. And I was offered £9. And I was just very upset. And I said, well, fuck, stick it up your ass, virtually.
Fair play. Well, we'll come back and talk about that Sheffield United move in a minute. But when you first came down, what was your impressions of the town and the squad? Where did you live? How did you find
I stayed in a hotel just off the station there. I can't remember the name of the road. You know the park in the middle of Boscombe?
Yeah, yeah.
Directly across the road, up around the back there, we stayed in a hotel. And till they found his digs, and we went into digs. And that's the way it was. But my impression of Bournemouth was good. I liked the place. It's a fabulous place to live, as I say. And I came home for the summer, and I went back. And I don't know if it's a common thing with all the English players or English lads, but I fucking got changed and I tan like a bottle of milk. The lad says, that's a fucking nightclub tan you have there. Because I wasn't a sunbather, because I burn, I go like a tomato, and they're all bronze. And I'm going, fucking hell, look at the state of me. I stay on the climatized, then I start sunbathing in the back garden to get a bit of a colour. No, it was great, and the lads were great. There was always a good atmosphere then, because you had a supporters club, and win, lose or draw, I went in there, and if you played bad, you were told, and if you had a good game, they told you, and you had a point with them. And I think that's why I get on with the supporters, because to me, not today, I don't think the players cared about them much, because they were paying their wages. And today it's changed dramatically. They don't get involved, which I think is wrong.
Now, in that first season, Tommy, Ian Cunningham played right back for most of that season, didn't he? What was your role in the team?
I played centre-half. I think Alec had me playing centre-half or midfield. Jock was there. I still keep in touch with Jock. Yeah, Alex was funny. Like, he chopped and changed. And, like, he got an envelope at the start of the season. And you think, well, it must be £100 in this or something for a fucking drink. And it was, I want you to score 12 goals. Hang on, I don't play up front. I'm fucking playing centre-half. Right back on midfield. And it's it there. I expect you to get 12 goals from your position this year.
Bloody hell.
Great time.
I wonder what the centre forward got.
Yeah. Well, Andy Crawford might have got him, because he never fucking passed.
maybe that was what was in his envelope. You need to pass the ball 10 times a season.
That could have been in his.
Yeah.
But it wasn't in ours.
Boy.
In fact, in 82-83, I got a hat-trick down from Uwe.
You did?
Yeah.
You did. We got that as a question, I think, coming up.
In that
side, you played along some great players, because that was Ted McDougall was in that side in that 79-80 season, wasn't it? It was his last season with the club. What was that like?
Well, Ted was one of these, being there, seeing it, done it, if you know what I mean, in a nice way. He was a nice man, and in training, he was a nightmare. Like, if he passed the ball and went right or left of him, he'd go, I want it to my feet. And I passed the ball to him, and he just let it go past him. He says, I want it in here. And I went, just put your foot out and fucking control it. And he went, no, I want it here. I said, I suppose, look, you're over the fucking hill now. And he said, you're right, son. He said, you haven't been fucking up it. And he walked off training. And I went, no answer to that, is there? Now, two laps, I was told, giving out to Ted. Oh, God. But, you know, as you say, with some good players. And
Don Givens came, didn't he? He was an Irish legend. He came and he scored a hat-trick, didn't he, I think? He had a short spell at the club. Was that nice having another?
Debut, I think he scored a hat-trick, didn't he?
Yeah.
That must have been nice. Nice for you having another Irishman in the team.
Like the likes of them, yeah, but they only came and went, if you know what I mean. They weren't... Yeah. You didn't get to know them.
No.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. Like, when George Best came or Charlie George came and Brian Kelly, like, you didn't get to know them. They were sort of in, do a bit of training. I think they were half injured then or just taking it easy and play because they were class players.
Yeah.
Like, they were like, I suppose when I came to the end of my career, you read the game better and you sort of, you do less running.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. And
it was that season, Tommy, where we went to Tranmere and beat them 5-0 and Kenny Allen got attacked by a pensioner. Were you in that game?
I was. I gave him the stick. He jumped out from behind the goal and started hitting him. Oh, God, it was amazing. I can remember Kenny getting beat, but I didn't remember the score in the game. But I remember it now when you say it, yeah.
Yeah, it was
I think they gave him a season ticket for life after that. Brilliant.
It was when, a bit later on, David Webb took over, and that was kind of the start, really, of the journey to more success. Could you remember him coming in, and what was he like when he first arrived?
Dave was a typical Londoner, you know what I mean? Fucking lovely, jabbly and all that. He was a bit like Harry. And but if it was on his mind, he said it to you. He pulled you in, and he told you exactly where you were and where you stood, and there was no ifs, buts and ands. And to respect that because of great man management skills, like Harry. Like Harry has great man management skills. That's why he gets on with everybody and he treats them. You want to be treated the way you're going to treat somebody else if you're the manager or the coach or, you know what I mean? And once you have that rapport, players go out and kill for you. And they give 100%. And that's what happened with Dave. He got on with everybody. He trained with us. He got stuck in. We used to have a North v South on a Friday on the all-weather pitch. There was more rows. I knocked Trevor Morgan out in one of them. Afterwards, he had to go with me, and I said, bring it on, son. And I went to kick him in the nuts, and he bent down, and I just uppercutted him. Never found a
were you North or South? Were you North or South?
When I say the tackles that went in them games was frightening. I was South.
You see, I was going to say, difficult for you to work out.
Remember Kenny had the pimple on his head? He had a sort of a thing on his head.
Yeah.
I can't know what we used to call him, but if you chipped him in the game or in training, he'd fucking, that used to pop out and he'd be chasing all over the place because he was 6 foot forward and he was getting chipped.
Fantastic.
But no, them all-weather pitch matches on a Friday, oh my God.
Yeah.
Fabulous. They were better than the games on a Saturday.
Well, on the Saturday, that 81-82 promotion season, you were talking about some of the players before we came on air. I mean, how would you describe that team?
Well, I'm looking at it now. I don't know if you can see it. I can go through it. Like
Ian Lee was the goalie, wasn't he?
Ian Lee took over from Kenny Allen because he broke his wrist, I think. Kenny broke his wrist and Ian Lee took over. Chris Sully left back. great left foot, great control, great Spackman.
Nigel Spackman.
He ended up,
yeah.
You know what I mean? And when he was under, who was it? He hardly ever got a game when he first came. And I think Dave Webb brought him out of his shell, and then Harry brought him out of his shell. You John Impey, who was my roommate, he was the club captain. And great centre-half, go through brick walls for you. Phil Bricknell, signed from West Ham. Steve Carter, great right winger. Keith Williams, we used to call him the Scissors because of his tackles. Trevor Morgan up front, right, big centre forward, give you everything. Tony Funnell, very quick. Used to hate marking him in training. Them small fellas, you can't fucking catch them. And Andy Crawford, he used to love kicking him. We went on tour after that, but we'll talk about that later. But no, we had a great side, and everybody cared for everybody. And you had Milton Graham there coming through. Derek Dawkins, you know. Yeah, what's his name? Doesn't matter as a fucking brush. He's not in the side there. He signed him. Was he at Swindon? Remember he broke his leg at Swindon? He was the next best thing as a centre forward. And then he broke his leg at Swindon. And he signed for Bournemouth. Oh, he was a looper. I tell you.
Who was that?
I'm going to tell you now. Howard Goddard.
Oh, what a great player he was.
Yeah. He was great. He was a lunatic, him. He was brilliant.
So tell us about...
Bailey was an up-and-coming good player as well in the U team. We had a great bunch of players, a great rapport, and when you have that, like, what more do you need? You're travelling to Hartlepool and going up north on the coach, like, coming back at 2 a.m, pissing in and being up the front, no toilets, nothing, and that's how it was. And you were up back on the same day.
There was no toilet, so you had to piss in a bin at the front of the coach.
Yeah, and the fucking coach driver looking at you, because he gay. You're trying to have a piss. Honestly, God, there was a bin down the steps. And we used to stop and get a few beers in the off license and get a chipper. And then we'd be down the back playing cards, having a smoke, a cigar going. And then you had to go down and, like, piss next to the driver.
Unbelievable.
So tell us about the tour then, because we've done the season. What was the tour like at the end?
The tour was a great tour. You think about this, like, we just played 40, I think I played 50-odd games that year with cups and everything else. And we went on tour, 9 games we had in New Zealand, 1 in Australia and 8 in New Zealand, travelling around the North Island, Whanganui, Gisborne. Wow. And when I say back in them days, like, you had to wind the bus up to get it going. Like, New Zealand then, the cars was like going back to Cuba, 1920s, an old school bus travelling around. The scenery was great. Unbelievable. Hotels, all the hotels were on one level. So it was like just crazy, and maybe putting a curfew. Well, lads, we arrived in Auckland, and like it was 26 hours, I think, we travelled. And we got there, and it took us for a 3-mile road run. And then back to the hotel, falling asleep in our dinner, and playing the next day. And after 20 minutes, we are 2-0 down. And he's gone mad. Like, I have to say, I came back, I scored 2. We won 4-2. I got man in the match, and I got a pair of trainers that were probably 19 fucking 20s. Who fucking size them? You wouldn't wear them gardening. But that was a great trip. You see, actually, that year... we played in a game, and John Impey wasn't playing, and I was captain. And they weren't easy games because, like, New Zealand were coming into football then.
Yeah.
Andy Crawford, There we go. Wouldn't pass the ball, wouldn't do this. I wasn't giving out to him, and he just said, fuck off, you know, the usual. And of course, I said, well, I'll take your head off now. And I get in the changing room to myself. But Webby attacked him and just had a word with him and told him to get changed. He just wasn't going out in the second half. Then we had a meeting back at the hotel, and he got him a flight and sent him home. And I think he sold him to Blackpool.
Yeah.
It was a big event for 75 grand. He never played in the world again.
He was a really talented player, but you're right, he just didn't pass enough.
Very frustrating, though. Like, I might go and watch. There's a friend of mine, his daughter, his grandchild, plays in a girls' team. And what a player. Unbelievable. It runs in the family. They're all very good players. And I didn't know who she was. And he said, what do you think of that little girl over there? And I said, I wouldn't have her on my team. He said, why? She's the best player. And I said, it's seven aside. I said, she won't pass the ball. She keeps losing after beating six players. Why would you have her on the side? He said, that's my granddaughter. I said, I don't give a fuck. I didn't have her in my team. You have to have players that, you know, you can't have individuals. You have individuals, but it's a team game. And we were a team then, which was brilliant. And we were a team under Harry as well in 87 when we won, you know. There's the program now, yeah. But those were the days. Those were when you played football for a living, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
If you weren't, that was a job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True and true. There was no like fucking. I don't even have a car now. I can't afford a car now. I'm on disability because I have new hip and my knee went, and that's all football, and just can't afford a car. It's fucking crazy. And they're parking Rolls Royces in the fucking thing. And if you touch off the telly, they fall over.
They do. You know what I mean? Talking about that, Tommy, there was loads of hard players around in the early 80s. You've talked about being quite a hard player yourself, which you were. Who was the hardest opponent you came up with against physically? Did you have any massive battles with people?
I looked in the mirror once, and that was probably the... I suppose Big Billy off Bradford.
Billy Whitehurst.
Yeah.
Hmm.
He broke my nose in that game.
In the Bradford game, that 2-2 draw.
Yeah. He straightened it, look. He used to be over there. Like, he used to be like Steve Bruce's.
Yeah.
And he came across and elbowed me. And I broke his wrist in that game.
How did you break his wrist?
He used to run across you. You know, he'd start on the outside and he'd come in to head the ball, but he'd leave his elbow in your face. Like, I wasn't born this ugly. And I seen him coming. I took three steps back. I knew he was going to miss it. And it just dropped. And I just followed it straight back at him as hard as I could. And he put his hand up and broke his wrist.
Yeah.
And we stood at the bar afterwards, and he says, you broke me wrist. And I said, well, you broke me nose. And he said, we're quits. And he was going to the hospital, having a pint before he went. Mad as a brush.
He used to do bare-knuckle boxing in the summer. He used to do fairground bare-knuckle boxing in the summer, Billy Whitehurst. And I don't think there's anything harder than doing bare-knuckle boxing in the fairground. And I think that says a lot about him, doesn't it?
Oh, well, it does, yeah. I think he practiced on my face, look. But a good footballer as well.
He was.
So you talked about becoming captain, Tommy. Did you see yourself as a natural leader in that side?
I think in that side, we were all captains. You get me? It wasn't like because I was captain, I took advantage of that fact. The fact was, we treated everybody the same. You were a leader. It was a name to us. It was a privilege. But to me, every one of us, like players, had goals at each other. And we all clicked. There was no coming in and arguing at half time. And you spoke to me, and you did this, and you know what I mean. That was the best thing about Dave Webb. That's and Harry, like maybe you'd have a go at me at half time and say, like, we are winning 1-0. I think we're beating Hull. And they come in and he's digging me out. And I'm going, okay, I'll say nothing. And after the game, I knocked on his door and I went in and said, what the fuck was all that? He said, well, there's fucking, what's his name, over in the corner. I can't think of who it was. He said, if I had a go with him, I might as well take him off. I know I can have a go with you. And the lads will say, well, we're winning 1-0. He's had the score and Dave Webb's having a go with him. So we must be doing all right. Reverse psychology. Never worked on my wife. But you see what I mean? Like, but there was no argument, and there was great, like, going away on the coaches, playing cards with Harry and smoking a cigar. And, like, that's the way it was in them days. We used to smoke King Edwards, traveling up on the coach and on the way back. Myself, John Smolers, and that when he was there, God, games of cards, brilliant. Imagine it now.
I know. One of the things that stands out about you, Tommy, was your goal scoring record. So you mentioned it earlier on. You scored 17 goals in two seasons, which for a right back is an incredible whack, including a hat trick against Millwall. What did you put that down to? I know you took a few penalties, but a lot of those weren't penalties because I remember them. Was it just you were just given free license?
Yeah, I'd like to score. And then, so I wanted to score in every game. I mean, if you look overall, I played 317 games and I scored 33 goals. That's a goal every 9 games. So that's not bad for a right back. Might be worth me weight in goal today. Can you imagine that, boy?
Yeah.
But yes, no, it was just down to being there at the right time. You know what I mean? It's like a good centre forward. Might not do well, but he score you 2 or 3 and he hasn't broken sweat. Maybe just lucky.
The hat trick must have felt great because it's really unusual to get a hat trick for a fullback.
It did. It was I remember it well. It was a header, a volley, and a penalty. Scored 2 in the first half, 1 in the second half. And I'll tell you what happened there. I got the ball signed by both sides, varnished it, brought it home, gave it to my dad, and he had it up. And next to, because I captained the Irish amateur side, so I had a jersey, and that was up there. And I come home one day, and I'd 3 brothers, and the 2 youngest are playing football in the garden. Well, that's great. We used to do that. We were playing with the hat trick ball,
kicking all the names off.
And then I said, I went into the house, said, like, well, where are they doing? The ball's ruined. And I said, where's my jersey going? Oh, there was a girl dying of cancer and round the corner, so we auctioned that off in the local pub. The fucking auctioned my shirt off as well. Crazy.
Brilliant.
But, like,
what did you make of George Best coming? Was that a surprise as well to the side?
When George Best turned up, the best team we've got was nobody really cared. We were all interested in Mary Stavin. She was gorgeous. He'd nutmeg you in train and we go, I don't care, George, I'm looking at your fucking jeans. Nutmeg me all you like. But he was the same. He'd go up for train and then go back to the hotel and you never seen him. And like, he was there and he was on 3 grand a week, 2.5 grand a week for matches because he packed out every game.
Yeah.
And then he started not turning up and he went back to London and Brian Tyler chased him down and found him. But like, he was just come in, train. Excellent player. Excellent. Even then.
You'd have played behind him, wouldn't you? Because was he right wing and you were right back? So who was
right back.
Who was covering who's running?
I didn't do much covering. But you could see the class was still there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That never went from him. He was world class. Well, you have Ronaldo now. I think he's more into his makeup now than fucking football.
Yeah.
One of the top 3 players ever.
No, he was.
I totally agree with that.
I can remember.
You know, it was silly. We never asked him for his autograph or sign your shirt. And when you go, well, I'll take that. He didn't do them things. Like some of the players, like I got the 1966 World Cup winning sides autographs at the PFA do. And I came back to Bournemouth, and a friend of mine, Eddie Lamb, I don't know if any of you knew him, he had a clothes shop in Charminster, facing the pub, and I gave it to him. Can you imagine what that's worth now?
Well, yeah.
And he worked for TVS, and he collected autographs, and his son robbed them all and sold them. And they were like, they were just players to me. Everybody was just sort of, you didn't treat them any different than they would treat you, I suppose.
Yeah, when you're on the pitch.
They didn't know me, I knew them.
Yeah. When you're on the pitch, you're all the same, I guess. I can remember George Best playing some tremendous crossfield passes, and the other whoever was on the other side hadn't made the run because they just weren't on the same wavelength as him.
That's what I'm saying. He was still, he still had that gift of, you know what I mean? We played Southend away, and he did that. And I was running. I thought he was going to, and he stepped over it, and I kept going. And I lobbed the keeper. It was in the summer, and I went, there we go. I turned. I thought it was in the net, and it bounced and went over the bar. But the dummy just left the defence stood. But I kept going, and the keeper came out, and I flicked it over. Well, I didn't flick it. I hit him a good bit out, and it bounced and straight over him, over the bar. But that's how quick the mind for him. Like somebody else probably would have controlled it. You don't know.
So you talked about the move up to Sheffield United and how that came about. I mean, you must have been a bit sick to leave, weren't you?
I was, yeah. Like, if you look at what I'd done and what they offered me, £9, like, it was an insult, really. And Phil Brickner was let go that year, and he was on the phone because he had no agents then. So if you wanted to get another club yourself, you rang and said, look, I'm Joe Bloggs from Bournemouth. They're letting me go. Do you need a centre-half, a right-back, centre-forward, whatever? And he rang Ian Porterfield, Lord of Mercy, on him, and asked him if he was looking for a centre-half. And he said, no, but I'm interested in Tommy Heffernan. And Phil said, no, he's had to sign a 3-year contract. Now, I can understand he's probably trying to get himself in and give a media elbow, but he told a friend, and a friend told me, and I rang Ian Porterfield. I said, look, I hear you're interested in signing me. He said, no, you've signed a 3-year contract. And I said, well, no, I haven't. And he said, okay, leave it with me. And he rang the club, and they wanted £85,000 for me. And I went in, seeing Harry and Brian Tyler, and I went, has anybody been in for me? And they said, no. I said, well, I've just been on the phone to Ian Porterfield. I said, and you want £85,000 for me? I said, I'll see you at the tribunal. I'm taking you to a tribunal. And they discussed it with Ian Porterfield again, and Porterfield rang me back and said, we've agreed a price, get the train up tomorrow. And that's the way it happened.
Mm. You had a great time up there, didn't you? I've got a friend who's a Sheffield United fan who remembers you very fondly. You became a bit of a cult hero, and you had a promotion, didn't you? What was it like? Bigger crowds? You must have loved it.
Bigger crowds? Like, we were averaging between probably 18 and 20-odd when the games were big. Different. Like, you're going from... Here I am, look, over on the left. What a man, though. Ian Porterfield. Great manager again. Man management skills, but... It's a Premiership club. And back then it was probably a First Division club. It's Sheffield Wednesday. But fanatical fans, I mean, it's chalk and cheese with Bournemouth. Bournemouth are lovely people. They're fanatics up there. And that's the difference. And yeah, we got promotion. We got promotion with Burnley, only drew at home. 0-0. And we went up by one goal difference, which was brilliant. And then went off on tour to the US of A, Hong Kong, China, Malaysia, Japan. And Phil Thompson was on loan to us from Liverpool then.
Oh, God, yeah, with the nose.
I played 100 games for them.
Hmm.
So, yeah, great time, great place, great people.
So why did you move back to Bournemouth?
Harry, we went on tour to America and I played right back there and I was leading scorer from right back. Gordon Jagel was managing Dallas Sidekicks and he asked me to stay out there and play in Doha. And he offered me a very good contract and Harry rang me and he was after having a spell in America. And he said, I want you to sign for Bournemouth. So I went back to Bournemouth and signed for Harry. So that was it. I could have went to America and made tons of money, but I didn't. I went back and played for Bournemouth.
Could you see in Harry Redknapp that the career that he went on to have managing Tottenham and everything, could you see that in the early days? Was he special?
Do you ever watch Only Fools and Horses?
Yeah, never miss it.
Yeah, fucking. What's Harry's nickname? Del Boy. Harry was always going to be there. But you don't go that far not being a bad manager. Being a bad manager. You know what I mean? And he picked players that were near the end of his contract and he gave them a second chance. And when you give somebody a second chance, they're going to fight tooth and nail for you. Mm. And look at the job he did at Portsmouth and won the FA Cup, was it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the amount of players that were on their last legs. So that's the type of man he was. And if you get in the fiddle, the book is out a million. No, I can't say that. You'd have probably got the England job.
Mm.
How much fun was it to be part of that championship winning side? That must have been such a laugh, wasn't it?
It was brilliant. The same again, like we used to all meet up and do things together that players don't do now. They just come and they disappear. Like I've been to the ground a couple of times. And when we had our 30-year anniversary, I was very surprised that Eddie Howe never turned up on the Friday night for our dinner, or the players didn't come in on the Saturday after to sort of mingle and say, geez, we were the first team to win the championship.
Mm.
And they never came and they were gone. And I thought that was very sad.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Not to be involved with a team that's done it and set the club on its way. Just to come and play the game and disappear. And it's like if you ask them for their autograph, it's like asking for fucking 20 quid or something, you think.
Mm.
Like, I've to be honest, I've no time for them. I don't when they're like that. If anybody ever spoke to me, I gave them time and I stopped and I chat and I go and do deals. Like, all they're interested in now, I think, is like, what's his name, is looking at leaving and going to Spurs.
Ryan Fraser.
Did you see him? I'd go training and I'd break both his legs. You don't leave the club until you play the season out. I know it's delayed and your contract's up in June, but you signed a contract to play until the season. Oh, I might get injured and I won't go to Spurs. You're not going either way, because I'd do him in training. Show some respect to the fans for and the club and say, right, I'll play the season out. And then I'm gone on a free transfer. Don't leave now. That's to me is, I'd kill him. I would, I swear to God.
Who were the best? Who were your best friends in that squad? Who do you used to go out drinking with? Was it Willow and Mazur?
We never went drinking.
Do you not?
No. John Hippy was my roommate. Or you mean in '87?
Yeah,
that squad. Yeah. We've had Willow and Paul Morell on, and they both said you had a great spirit of going out together.
Yeah, it was vodka. We did, but that's what I'm saying. We'd hook up one night a week, we gelled. We went out together. We'd get weighed on a Friday morning, and if you were overweight, you paid a fiver a pound, and then you went to McDonald's after training. We used to go in the Queen's Park Golf Club into the sauna and jog in a plastic bag before we get weighed in and go training them. And because you were a fiver, was like a fiver was to us. We weren't earning
Yeah.
You know what I mean? When I signed for Bournemouth, on 80 quid a week. You know what I mean? Yeah, when lads kick the waiters, that. You know what I mean?
So we
enjoyed ourselves. I won't say too much because what happens at home stays at home. But we enjoyed ourselves, but we also fought hard for each other. And that showed on the pitch. So nobody can take that away with us. It wasn't like, oh, we're seeing them down the pub fucking Friday night and they're playing the Saturday.
So yeah, there was a story that when we went to play Middlesbrough at Ayresome Park, 2-0 down at half time, you grabbed their manager, Bruce Rioch, by the throat. What was that all about?
He had to go with one of the players on the way in. He was digging there. I can't remember who it was, and I just grabbed him and fucked him through the doors. And there was three or four fellas hanging out me, stopped me punching his eyes out. He came and apologised after the match, so I must have been right. He did. He came and apologised, but I had him in the weight room. We ended.
Heat of the moment stuff, wasn't it? But yeah, you played a big part in that championship season, more than I remember, actually, because I was looking back. You had that spell where we won an awful lot of games over Christmas. I think Martin Newson went back up front. You came back in at right back, didn't you?
Yeah.
Were you disappointed you didn't play more, or did you just see that was the way that...
You were part of the team going for the championship, and like you play your best squad. You know what I mean? And that's how it is. You're part of a squad, and if you're not playing, you're still part of the squad. You still have a say in the changing room. You go in at half time and you try and book the lads up. And that's what I used to do, and cheer them on and boost them up and go out and play better in the second half. Sometimes Harry never said a word. We played right. Swinging away. He didn't need to do the talk. I'd done the talk. And that's how it worked in them days.
Not good.
Now they have to bring in a packet of fucking hankies in case you upset them.
Harry said that you were so hard you used to head cricket balls. Did you?
Yeah, but I got paid for it.
Oh, well, that's all right then.
There was no money in them days, so I used to say, well, I'd head the cricket ball the length of the changing room if everybody cuts a few balls in the middle of a table. And they'd throw it at me and I'd head it. It's never affected me.
Not at all. At the end of that season, we've had a few of the players on, and they remember the trip to Portugal very well. Do you remember the trip to Portugal?
Vaguely, but it depends what they told you.
Well, we've had I think Mark O'Connor and Tony Pulis falling out with everyone. We've had a few bits. What do you remember? You must have one funny story.
I can't tell you because it was. I'd get a lot of people in trouble. We sort of had I suppose I better tell you. No, we sort of had a running battle with the locals. So, I'll say no more.
Who won?
The locals or?
What do you think?
Yeah, you won. Oh, boy.
So, the Portugal trip was great, but everybody remembers Tony Pulis and Mark O'Connor. And my wife was pregnant at the time. So, with our first child and going in and having a test. But everybody remembers that because they never spoke to anybody afterwards. And it's like when Tony was made coach. Like, I understand you have to change, but his first day he came in and Harry just said, well, Tony's my new coach. And we went, where's that come from? And we got out on the pitch and he said, well, we want you to do three laps. And we all just turned and said, fuck off. You've only just taken over and you think like you're going to make us run the ass off us. Fuck off.
Did you see him becoming a good manager?
I don't know. To be honest, I wouldn't say he got on with the players. His man management skills. Yeah, you are, Tony. To me, I don't think he had the personality. And I still don't think he has. I've seen a few interviews and I'd say he crucified the players. Maybe I'm wrong, but I've never spoke to anybody that's been under his management to find out, to be honest. But to me, playing with him and the way he behaved, like, he never mixed with the players. Him and Mark O'Connor, who went on to the coach for him and be his right-hand man, they were always individuals and never mixed with us. They never came out with the lads and anything else. So they were sort of two lads on their own, if you know what I mean.
Looking back at that season, it was interesting because you scored in that season. Tony Pulis was the only outfield player not to score in that promotion season because you scored away at Gillingham when he came back in. It's interesting. Every single member of the squad scored apart from Tony Pulis.
He was never a goal scorer, though, because he was never... His job was to win the ball in midfield. He was a bit like Keith Williams. Great tackler, but he wasn't an attacking midfielder. He'd sort of just... Between there, you'd never seen him going a 20, 30-yard run to break the defence down and try and make space for himself to score.
No, protected the back four, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, that was it.
Sorry, Jeff, I interrupted you.
No, I was going to say, how did you celebrate winning promotion that season? Can you remember any of it?
What did we do? Well, it happened at Fulham. We all got the coach. We bought the club out of champagne. All the wives and girlfriends had come up, so they came back on the coach with us and just had the best time ever. Sunday was a blank, I think Monday was a blank. It was just a brilliant day.
If the wives and girlfriends were on the coach, there was no bin by the driver.
You had a toilet then. We've moved on. You know what I mean? And it was just as well, you know what I mean? Otherwise, I'd have been a very busy man.
Oh, dear. And then, how did retirement come? Was it injury?
No. I finished playing with... I played till I was 46. I came back to Ireland and played amateur here.
Right.
And I played for Poole Town and Poppies and... Swanage Town and that over in Sturminster Marshall, and just came back here and a fella said to me, I hear you used to play in England. He says, we need to win our next five games not to get relegated. Would you play for us? And he said, yeah. He said, we're training on Thursday. I said, no, don't do that anymore. And turn up on Sunday, pick me up. And St. Joseph's Boys it was, and I'll never forget it because I got my boots out and I went into the change room and I could hear them saying, who's the old man in the corner? You know what I mean? And then I got out on the pitch and I spun a few 50-yarders and 40-yarders and they were going, where the fuck did you get him from? And we won the five games and they never got... I played with them for another season after that.
Brilliant. Were you still at right back or were you up front or where did you play?
Centre-half.
Tommy, when you took penalties, do you ever remember placing one? Because Neil and I can't remember that you ever did.
I always put them in the left-hand side, the keeper in the side netting. The one against Hull, I mishit. But I always put them to the keeper's right.
Yeah, but they went like a bullet, didn't they? You didn't try for them.
Yeah, the one thing you do is don't change your mind.
Mm.
You just pick a spot. Because I wanted to take them. You see him, they're going up and they think, he's going to miss. When you see them on the telly, you know they're going to miss because you have to want, give me the ball, I'm taking the penalty, fuck off. That is me.
When you watch the side now on telly, it's obviously such a different world for all of us. I want to
jump on the fence and kick every one of them up the ass and say, my God, like if you fall over again without getting touched.
who stands out for you? Who do you like watching?
I don't like watching any of them at the moment. I watch a lot of football on the telly, but you don't have the same interest now. It's not like you're glued to the telly. You're just like you're having a conversation. Like I'd come to the pub on a Sunday afternoon and meet all the lads. Well, we're all old men now. But you do more talking than watching now because of the way the game is played.
Yeah.
The rules. There's no getting stuck in and it's Liverpool and it's all football. I went to watch Spurs and Bournemouth this season at the new ground.
Yeah.
And I wanted to run down, jump over, and kick somebody and go, oh. And you know what? It cost me 75 quid to get in.
Blimey.
I didn't even get a complimentary ticket. So Bournemouth owed me 75 quid. And I paid my door. It cost me 210 quid for tickets. I have to go out of my way to get a ticket for Bournemouth.
Mm.
If I come over.
We've heard a lot of that. We've heard a lot of that from the some of the older players saying that they just can't get in. It's quite disappointing, really, I guess, that the club doesn't do a little bit more.
I've won two promotions for the club. I've won two murals, and it's like I'm ringing up begging for a ticket.
Not good.
Not good.
One other thing, Tommy, you were also a bit of a style icon with that bubble perm that you had in the 80s. Where did you get your hair done in Bournemouth?
I was going out to the hairdresser. Okay. And her friend was away on holiday. I'd never met her. Like, this is when I start going out with a girlfriend. And when her mate came back, I start going out with her. And I made a mistake at going back to get a light perm off the old girlfriend. And she fucking sacked me. And that's the truth. And I ended up marrying Sarah, her friend. And we have my beautiful daughter Zoe. But that's what happened. Like, I went for one of these in fashion light perms, and my hair was already a little bit curly. But she sat me. When I say, it just was like, gone. That's the truth.
Wow,
fantastic.
Revenge is a dish best served cold, mate.
You couldn't make it up, but that's
I couldn't make it up.
Honestly, God.
Thanks so much, Tommy. It's been a wonderful trip down memory lane.
I tell you, I've enjoyed it. And anytime you want to be in touch, you have my details now.
Yeah.
Anytime. It's a pleasure. It's always nice to do something for, I hope the supporters see it, because I love the supporters.
Well, did you know that there's a fan who follows you on Twitter, a Bournemouth fan called Tommy Heffernan's Poodle?
Is he a twit as well?
No comment. But it's been great having you on.
Yeah.
It's been
fantastic.
Thanks very much.
Thank you. Cheers. Thanks.
I hope it goes well. And
thank you.
As I say, anytime.
Amazing. What a chat. Oh my goodness. His opinion on Wee Man. Tommy was the last fullback to score double figures in the league season. And yeah, he loved our club so much. He joined it twice. He made 217 appearances and scored 27 times, being part of two promotion sides here in Bournemouth. And another promotion, of course, with Sheffield United, as he alluded to. It seems that life with Tommy was never dull, was it? But brilliant. Excellent. Thank you very much for coming on, Tommy. We really appreciate it. So who's coming up? Well, we're joined by Warren Cummings and Brian Stock, two players who graced the Cherry shirt for over 16 years between them, one a midfield maestro and the other an attacking fullback. They both found regular first team football at the Cherries, going through some lows and highs, both on and off the pitch. We cannot wait to bring you that. Now, just a heads up, we're back to normal podcasting schedules as of after this weekend, so our regular Monday show will drop. But thank you for all the positive comments and the coffee donations. If you want to contribute, you can. It's afcbpodcast.com/coffee. Really appreciate everyone who's managed to do that. But until then, you've been listening to the Lockdown Interviews.
Soon Bournemouth's troubles increased when Tom Heffernan found himself sent off for that tackle. He'd been booked earlier in the match, and now, despite Barnes trying to dissuade the Yorkshire referee, the fullback was off. It hadn't looked a bad enough tackle, though, for a second booking, perhaps.